The reading is taken from Genesis chapter 9, beginning at verse 16. Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for you for 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than to some other man. Stay here with me." So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife. My time is completed, and I want to lie with her." So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob, and Jacob lay with her. And Laban gave his servant girl, Zilpah, to his daughter as her maidservant. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?" Laban replied, "It is not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish this daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also, in return for another 7 years of work." And Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant's girl Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maidservant. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. And he worked for Laban another 7 years. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Just a prayer before I start. Lord, I ask you to take these words and use them to bring glory to you and you alone. Amen. I've read that when Oliver Cromwell had his portrait painted, or he said, "Paint me warts and all." Now, that wouldn't be a problem for Rachel, would it? Because the Bible describes her as looking lovely in form and beautiful. Well, it was with part of our service with Joseph being performed this morning and it being Mothering Sunday. What should I link it with? I was actually given the passage of Joseph in the bulrushes. And I thought, gosh, how do I link that through? So I thought I'd speak about Joseph's mother, Rachel, instead. It seemed a better link to me. She was so beautiful. She was actually the real apple of Jacob's eye. And Jacob and Rachel, as we know, were Joseph's mother and father. So in a way, what I'm doing this morning is telling the story behind the story of Joseph. I do implore that you read it yourselves. It's in Genesis 29 to 35. I've got to try and place it in about 5 minutes, so if I miss bits and muck it up, please forgive me. And then having done that, what I want to do is think about the legacy that both Rachel and her sister Leah left behind, and think about what legacies we might leave behind in our lives. So the story of Rachel and her family is a story of love at first sight, of love frustrated by deception, of rivalry within the family, of lack of trust in God and trying other solutions, of love potions, would you believe? God's blessing at last, a time to move on, and then an episode of stealing and telling lies, and death in childbirth. Well, if you're ready, let's start and see how we get on. Love at first sight. Jacob had left his home at his mother's sort of behest and told to go to find her brother Laban, who lived in Haran, a relative. And so he arrives in Haran and he goes to the local well and he sees a load of shepherds sitting there with a stone over the well. And he asked them, shouldn't you be watering your sheep? It's the time to do it. And they said, no, we're waiting for someone to come. He said, do you know Laban? He's a relative of mine. I said, yes, his daughter Rachel's just coming. And sure enough, Rachel turned up. Joseph helped her to water her sheep. And he kissed her and cried because she was a member of his family. He was really touched to meet her. And then Jacob was taken home to meet Laban, and he lived with Laban for about a month. And Laban said to him, look, it's not right that you're with me, you're helping me farming, let me pay you a wage. And the passage that we read, Jacob said, no, I don't want a wage, I want to work for you so that I can have the hand of Rachel. And they agreed to work 7 years. Gosh, that's a long sort of period of time, isn't it? Imagine having an engagement of that length. It would be quite something, wouldn't it? 7 years he worked for. He came to the end of those 7 years and he said, look, I want to have my wife now. So Laban arranged a party for him. And probably even might have been a bit of drink there. I don't know. I'm not quite certain how this deception went. But anyway, he went to bed with this maid in a sort of veil, I should imagine. And horror of horrors, having slept with her, he woke up in the morning to find that it was weak-eyed Leah that he had laid with. Can you imagine that? But Laban's excuse was, it's not our sort of way in our country that you should marry the younger daughter first. So if you work for me for another 7 years, you can have Rachel as well. But you don't have to wait those full 7 years. If you stay with Leah for a week, then you can have Rachel as well. Well, that's what happened. But we're told in the Bible that when the Lord saw how Rachel was loved, but Leah wasn't, he blessed Leah, opened her womb, it says in the Bible, so that she could have children, but Rachel couldn't. And you can imagine the frustration of that on both sides, for both Rachel and Leah. Leah had four children, and the first one, as we've seen in our story this morning, was called Reuben. And Leah named him, or said, the Lord has seen my misery. That's what Reuben meant. She had another baby, Simeon. And she named him Lord Simeon, because Lord heard that I'm not loved. And then the third one, Levi. And she thought to herself, now my husband will become attached to me because I've had three sons. And then the fourth one, Judah. This time she said, I will praise the Lord. But after that, she didn't have any children for a bit. When Rachel saw what was going on, and she couldn't have children, she gave her maidservant to Jacob, and he lay with her. She was called Bilhah, and Rachel said, this is what I think I should do. And she did have a son through Bilhah, and he was called Dan. And she thought to herself, the Lord's listened to me and give me a son, because in a way it was like adoption, because she was her maidservant. It became her child in a way. And lo and behold, Bilhah had another son called Naphtali. I've had a great struggle with my sister, Rachel said, but I've won. I've got two children, even though they weren't her own. But as I said before, Leah stopped having children, so she gave her maidservant to Jacob as well. Gosh, he must have been really, well, I don't know. A lot more energy than me, I think. But anyway, she was called Zilpah, and she had two sons, one of them called Gad, and she called him Gad, and she said to herself, what good fortune I've had. And then she had another one, or he had another one, or they had another one through Zilpah, and called him Asher. How happy I am, that was what his name sort of meant. And then we got a really peculiar part in the Bible. We learned that Reuben was following the people in the fields who were, cutting down the corn, and he found some mandrakes. This bit sounded to me very much like Harry Potter, the potions class in Harry Potter, because he brought these mandrakes home, and they could be made into a love potion. And when Rachel saw that Leah had got them, Reuben gave them to his mother, Leah. She said, can I have some of those? And she thought, well, you're going to steal my mandrakes as well? She said, well, you can have them if you let me sleep with Jacob again. So she bought a little bit more of Jacob's time. And lo and behold, it wasn't Rachel that had kids at that time, but Leah did. She had another son called Issachar. God has rewarded me for giving my maidservant, she said. So that's five sons, isn't it? And then lo and behold, Leah has another son called Zebulun. My husband will treat me with honor, now she thought to herself. And then Leah had a daughter. And just to sort of show the struggle in life, that daughter, Dinah, was raped later on as part of her life. But then we've got a really important couple of verses in the Bible. Let me read them to you. Then God remembered Rachel. He listened to her and opened her womb. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son. God has taken away my disgrace, and she named him Joseph and said, may the Lord add to me another son. After Jacob had had that son, Joseph, whom he loved greatly as he did his mother, he wanted to leave Laban and not work for him for any more. But Laban was a bit of a wily old what's it. And he said, well, you're doing well here. Why do you want me to leave me? And so Jacob actually agreed to work for him for another 6 years. But Jacob was a clever farmer. He said to Laban, I will work for you. But I need my own flock. If I take the spotted and coloured sheep and goats, then, those can be mine, and I'll look after your ones as well. So he was a good farmer. He knew what he was doing, and he sort of managed to sort of get the stronger goats to mate because he puts a fence in front of the water or something. I don't know, it all sounds a bit strange, but he did manage to build up a flock. But in so doing, he annoyed the other brothers of Laban. They said, look, Joseph's actually got everything. And I think Joseph was scared of both Laban and of the other brothers. So he left home. He talked to Rachel and Leah and the rest of the family and said, get ready, we're going to go. Because the Lord also had told him, God had told him, it's time to move on. You've got to go on to another place. And Rachel and Leah thought to themselves, well, my father in a way has sold me to Jacob, so what inheritance have we got here? We'll all move on together. And so Jacob got them all ready and he left while Laban was out in the fields. But Laban was really annoyed about this. And he sort of chased after them. He wondered, you know, why they had left. Rachel did one other thing at this stage. She stole her father's household gods. I don't know, you know, what these things were, but she took them with her. And so they went out into the desert away, and Laban caught up with them. And rather like Joseph did with the brothers here, you didn't see that bit, but who came along to the show actually and saw it? Quite a few of you. Well, you might remember that Joseph had planted a cup in Benjamin's sack and accused him of stealing it. In a similar way, Rachel actually did steal something from him, these household gods. And Laban went through all the tents where they had parked up for the night and looked for these household gods but couldn't find them because Rachel was sitting on her camel. She said, I'm having my period. I'm sorry, Dad, I can't move. And so she got away with it. But Jacob had said when he was talking to Laban, if anyone has stolen your gods, then he will die. Well, let's move on two chapters. Miss out those bits. It's the bit where Jacob has to meet up with his brother, Esau. He was dreading that. So he lined all his family up in a long row. And so they were looking like gifts for him, and that was the idea. But he managed to sort of solve his problems with Esau. And then in the next bit of the chapter is a bit about Jacob wrestling with God, just a story. And then we get to the bit where, and it's a good 17 years later, that we hear of the death of Rachel. The Bible says this, then they moved on from Bethel, and while they were still going some distance from Ephrath, which is Bethlehem, Rachel began to give birth and had great difficulty. And as she was having great difficulty in childbirth, the midwife said to her, don't be afraid, for you have another son. And she breathed her last, for she was dying, and she named him Ben-Oni, but his father named him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. Over her tomb, Jacob set up a pillar, and to this day, that pillar marks Rachel's tomb. Well, that's the story. I don't know how long it took me, probably a little bit too long. What I want to think about just very quickly is what was the legacy that was left behind from Rachel and from Leah? It was through the line of Leah and her son Judah that we have the line leading down that sort of list that's in the front of Matthew's gospel of the descendancy to Jesus. So it's linked right through. How about the legacy of Rachel, this beautiful girl? She was initially, it was Joseph, and obviously him being able to rescue his family from starvation at home by them coming to Egypt to buy food and then living here. We know that Pharaoh's changed, and later on there was a time when they had to come to leave Egypt, and that's the story of Exodus. So we have that situation where he saved his family, he kept that generation going, and that was through the line of Rachel. But there's more. Do you know, Rachel's name is mentioned in two other places in the Bible, in Jeremiah in the Old Testament and Matthew in the New Testament. And the words are these in Jeremiah 31:15. It says, "We hear of a voice is heard in Ramah," again, that's near Bethlehem, "great mourning and great weeping, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because her children are no more." And that was used by Jeremiah in his sort of prophecy when the nation of Israel were carted off to Babylon. And we know that they were to return later on, but it was seeing that family going and mourning about it. In Matthew's gospel, the same verse is used to describe a time when Herod was seeking to kill Jesus. And we remember he went to Bethlehem to kill all the baby boys under the age of 2. Jesus, we remember, escaped because God was speaking to Joseph in a dream. That's Joseph, Jesus' father. And he was taken with Mary to Egypt, and they stayed there until Herod died, so that Jesus would live and become our salvation, everybody's salvation. 2 Josephs leading their families to safety in Egypt. God doesn't forget Rachel. So what does the story tell us, and what will be our legacy to future generations? Rachel was no saint, as we heard in the story, but God did use her, and God remembered her. We may think in our lives that if God knew me, he wouldn't want to know me or having anything to do with me, because we're conscious of the things that we might have done wrong. But if you think about it, he does know us, and he loves us anyway, warts and all. I want to end by telling you a story about a beautiful girl that I once knew. She recently died, and she died all alone with a broken leg. It may well have been the broken leg that caused the problem, that caused her death. She wasn't found for 2 to 3 weeks because she cut herself off from her family and her friends. She had problems with alcohol. And you can imagine her thinking maybe that she completely messed up her life by what she'd done. I went to her funeral, and at that funeral there were several things that happened that made it seem that her life was so worthwhile. There was reconciliation within her family at that funeral. Her sons hadn't seen their father for years, but he came, and there was reconciliation there. There were friends that came to that funeral who hadn't seen her for over 10 years, maybe even longer than that, but they remembered her. She was a nurse, more than a nurse. She was a sister in charge of an intensive care unit. And she had saved many, many lives during her time working there. And they came along to her funeral and just said how much they remembered. Isn't it a shame, actually, that in a way we leave it so long to tell people how much we value them, rather than telling them when they're alive how much we appreciate them? I want to say that in spite of our many blemishes and mistakes, God gives his value not only through the good things we do, but through our failures as well, if we allow him to. Because it says in another part of the Bible, we've all failed, and none of us reach God's standards. But God values us more than we can ever know. He thinks that we're worth dying for, and that's what Jesus has done for each one of us. You know, we won't know what our legacy is, what we leave behind, but God does, and it's sort of just going back to my first point with Oliver Cromwell. He longs, I think, to paint a picture of our lives which to him is blemish-free, because Jesus has taken away all that mars us. It's called grace. And I think that's what you who met in the Rosen Crown yesterday were hearing about. And I just wonder, will you receive that grace from him? Will you allow him to take away anything that mars our lives? The song we're about to sing, in a way, I think picks up that theme quite well. Pour over me. We'll sing it to you now.